Kathleen Helm as Catherine of Aragon, and Hector Ross as Henry VIII in True and Lawful Queen, a play for broadcasting by Alison Tarden. Early summer, 1527. It's 18 years since Henry VIII became King of England. 18 years since he married his brother's widow, the Spanish princess Catherine of Aragon. In Europe, there is war. Yet another round of the continuing struggle for supremacy between Valois and Habsburg. The King of France and his Italian allies against the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, the Queen of England's nephew, ruler of Spain, the Low Countries, and a patchwork of German states. In England, the political scene is dominated by the bulky scarlet figure of the King's great minister, Thomas Wolsey, Lord Chancellor, Cardinal Archbishop of York, and Papal Legate, whose foreign policy has become strongly pro-French. In London, late one evening, about the middle of May, a muffled figure is hurrying through the summer dark towards the lodgings of Don Inigo de Mendoza, the Emperor's ambassador at King Henry's court.
Who knocks? Who's there? This is no time for honest folk to be abroad.
Open, for the love of God. I must speak with the ambassador.
What is your business, master? Senor Don Inigo sees no strangers at this hour.
I am no stranger to Don Inigo. I come from court, and my business is urgent and secret. The word is God and the Empire.
God and the Empire. Then my orders are to admit you, sir. What name shall I give to the senor?
No name, fellow. This is a secret matter. Tell Don Inigo that I come on affairs of the greatest importance to the Emperor.
Who is it, Roberto? Who knocks?
One who says he comes from the court, Excellency. He gave the word.
Who are you, sir? What do you want with me?
A friend, senor, who craves pardon for this intrusion, but must have speech with you at once, in private.
Then you are welcome, friend. Come, let us go within. You can go to bed, Roberto. I shall not need you again tonight.
As your Excellency pleases. No names, he says.
Aye. But I've seen your face before, master. The warrant it means trouble. One of the Queen's servants abroad at such an hour.
And now, Francisco Felipe, how may I serve you? Be seated, I pray you.
Thank you.
Do you come with a message from the Queen?
I come from court, senor, and I bring grave news. To crown all his other iniquities, the Cardinal of York is now working to separate the King and Queen and compass a divorce between them.
A divorce? Francisco, are you sure of this?
Yes, senor. The king himself is so bent on the separation, and the plot is so far advanced, that already certain bishops and lawyers have been secretly assembled before the cardinal to examine the matter, and declare the marriage null and void.
But why? What possible reason can the king allege for such a wicked action?
It is said because my lady was first married to the king's brother, Prince Arthur, who died young, and therefore they are within the forbidden degree of affinity.
Yes, yes, but that is old history. Dispensations for the queen's second marriage were granted at Rome, and all was done after the proper form.
Well, they are saying now that the king is troubled in his conscience, and believes the reason he has no male children is because he has offended God.
It is true he needs a male heir. There is only the Princess Mary. And these islanders are so turbulent they could never be ruled by a woman.
And the queen, poor soul, is now beyond the age for bearing children.
But the king might get sons by a new wife. Is that the true reason, Francisco? You say this is the cardinal's doing.
The queen believes the principal cause why she is made to suffer is that she is held to devote herself to the emperor's interests and has tried to prevent the cardinal's alliance with the French.
He is shortly to go to France. Does he mean to find another wife for his master there, I wonder?
They are saying. And I pray you, for God's love, senor, let not one word of this be written to a living soul, that the king has a new lady, and not in France.
A new lady? But he has had lighter love before. There is nothing strange in that.
They say this is different, that the king or the lady means marriage.
Marriage? In God's name, who is this lady?
One of the queen's maids of honor. Her name is Anya Boleyn. They say she is a sorceress who has bewitched the king so that his fancy is besotted.
Oh, this is superstitious gossip, Francisco. The king is not a boy, nor a fool. You have not said that you come from the queen, but you have served her for many years. You know her counsels, and she trusts you. I will not press you, but I cannot believe you have come here without her knowledge. Time may be short, so tell me what she wishes me to do.
The Pope must be put on his guard with all possible secrecy, in case any application is made to Rome against the marriage. The Queen fears that His Holiness may be deceived by some false statement if he's not forewarned.
Yes. And it would be well if the Emperor were to inform his ambassador at Rome of this affair, so that he too may be on his guard and know how to conduct matters with the Vatican.
Senor, the Queen is so alarmed at the course events here are taking and is so much in her husband's power that she dare not venture to speak to you directly. But, after God, all her hopes rest on the Emperor.
The Queen may be assured that I will write at once to the Emperor, and may God send the courier fair winds at sea.
Amen to that.
But I wish some special person might be sent to Spain who could lay the case fully before him. As you say, there are matters here which are best not committed to writing.
Yes, and the Queen dare not write herself. She's too closely watched. The Cardinal has spies among her women, and she fears her letters are opened. But if, by any means, a messenger may be sent, it shall be myself.
That is like to be a dangerous errand, Francisco.
I have served my lady these many years, Señor. I was her page when she came out of Spain. And I would count it an honor to lay down my life for her.
Yes. You're a brave man, Francisco, and a true one. But let the Queen be of good cheer. If this affair is proceeded with, it must soon become public. And then I think some disturbance will ensue, for she is greatly beloved in this kingdom. And the Cardinal is now so generally hated that I do not believe he will dare press matters to extremity.
Pray God you are right, Señor. But the Cardinal is a man of great wit and subtle policy. I will take my leave and trouble you no more at this time. But once again, I beg you will use the utmost secrecy in this matter. As yet, the King and Cardinal believe the Queen knows nothing of their wicked practices. And until they summon the courage to tell her, it were best she should appear to be ignorant.
Venid a sorcera. That was delightful, Jane. You play very prettily, my child.
Thank you, madam. Would it please your highness to hear another air?
Is the queen's grace within?
I thought you didn't have to be there.
Madam, here is the king.
God save you, ladies. God save you.
My lord, you are welcome. I have been enjoying pleasant pastime with Mistress Seymour. I wish you might have heard how sweetly she plays.
Yes, yes, perhaps another time. But now, madam, I should like some speech with you, alone.
Oh, why, certainly, my lord. Mistress Seymour, you have our leave to go.
Your grace, madam.
I am happy to see you, my lord.
I must speak with you on a matter of great moment.
My lord?
I am sorely troubled in my conscience, Kate. I have consulted with certain learned and pious men in this realm who tell me that our marriage is defective. To be plain with you, we are living in mortal sin. I am resolved, therefore, that we can no longer continue together as man and wife. We must separate, and I wish you should choose some pleasant place of retirement, away from court.
My lord,
Kate, come, sweetheart, do not weep. You must not weep. It is not that I have ceased to love you. You must believe I love you still. You have always been the best, the most virtuous of women. But I am so troubled in my conscience, this terrible doubt which gives me no rest.
But why, my lord? Wherefore should you doubt? All Christendom can witness that I am your lawful wedded wife and have been nigh on it 20 years.
No, Kate. Our marriage is contrary to God's law. It is written in the Holy Bible. If a man shall take his brother's wife, it is an unclean thing. They shall be childless.
I swear upon my soul that your brother never knew me. I came to you a virgin, unspotted from my mother's womb, and so I have heard you acknowledge. All the wisest men in this realm and in Spain agreed to our marriage, and the Pope gave dispensation for it.
But can the Pope dispense against God's law? That is what troubles me. And Kate, you say Arthur never knew you, but yet were you married to him in the eyes of the church and lay with him. And the Pope did not dispense the impediment of public honesty. In the eyes of this realm and the world, you were my brother's wife.
My lord, I am a poor woman, a foreigner in your realm, and ignorant of the law. But yet I know I am your true wedded wife, and so I will always be. And what of our daughter, my lord? Would you have her declared a bastard before the world? Nay, an incestuous bastard?
No. No. All shall be done for the best. Our daughter will be safeguarded and make an honorable marriage. Do not be afraid, sweetheart. All may yet be well. The best, the most learned doctors in Christendom shall examine the matter. I will seek counsel from Rome, and my Lord Cardinal is gathering opinions in France.
Yes, the Cardinal. I doubt not this is of his procurement and setting forth.
No. I swear it is my conscience alone which has moved me to this conclusion. For Kate, why else should God, who knoweth my righteous heart and has favored me in all things, why else should God deny me male children?
I will not dispute with you on that head, my lord. Safe to say that all increase cometh from God. If it has pleased him to take our male children from us in their infancy or stillborn, it is not for us to question his wisdom. If you are still troubled by doubt, it is right they should be set at rest. I ask only that I be not put from you and condemned unheard, and that I too may take counsel on the law.
Yes, 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 all shall be arranged in due time. Be of good cheer, sweetheart, for I doubt not all will be well. And I promise, upon my honor, neither you nor our daughter shall suffer wrong.
Francisco? Francisco Felipe? Senor Don Inigo?
Yes, it is I, Francisco.
Plague on this darkness, I can see nothing.
I have a lantern, senor. I will lead you to the queen by the privy way. Follow me and tread quietly. Should we meet with anyone, say nothing.
This is an ugly business. When the emperor's ambassador is constrained to visit the queen by night and in disguise.
Aye, but such is the character of the people engaged in this affair and the fury with which they proceed. I believe there is no baseness they would not be capable of. And so is the queen obliged to resort to these shifts. Here is the private entrance to the queen's apartments. Wait, senor, and I will make certain that all is safe.
Uno?
Your servant, Francisco, madam, and the friend you know of. Shall I bid him enter?
Enter, Francisco. All is well.
I will await you below, senor, to stand guard and guide your way back.
You are welcome, senor Don Inigo. I ask your pardon for sending to you after this sort and receiving you in such a manner. And I thank you for coming to me so promptly.
It is my pleasure to serve you, madam, and my wish only to comfort and assist you in your present trouble.
Oh, in truth, I think I have been suffering the pains of purgatory all these months since my marriage was first called in question. But I have asked you to come now, thus in secret, on a matter of great urgency concerning the brief issued by Pope Julius, of which the original is held in Spain.
The document bearing the same date as the bull of dispensation for your Highness's marriage?
Yes. for it is said to make good any flaws that may be alleged in the bull. Don Inigo, word must be sent at once to the Emperor. I am greatly afraid that the evil counselors who surround my lord the king mean to send a messenger into Spain to get possession of the brief, then put it where it will never be found again.
Madam, I assure you there is no need for alarm. In the event of an envoy being sent on such a mission, strict orders will be given not to show him the original document.
Alas, senor, you do not know these people are my enemies. They will spare no effort to obtain the brief and make away with it. I wish I might send another envoy of mine own to Spain. But Francisco Felipez has already once put himself in jeopardy for my sake. There is no one else I can trust. Besides, I fear I am troubling my nephew, and he will grow weary of me.
Madam, the Emperor will never desert you, and will continue to do everything in his power to aid you. Has he not said that he considers your cause to be his own?
Senor, if only the Pope might be persuaded to decide this matter himself, I should be grateful forever. I know that if I am granted a hearing, my cause is won, for no impartial judge would condemn me. But if the examination to be held here by Wolsey and Cardinal Campeggio, the new legate, is allowed to go forward, nothing but injustice and great scandal to the Holy Church can follow.
Is it yet known whether Campeggio has indeed brought a mandate from the Pope, giving Wolsey and himself authority to pass judgment on the case?
I know very little, Senor Ambassador. I believe their lordships are soon to visit me and declare their minds unto me. But I am only one woman, destitute in a foreign country, and ignorant of the law. My lord, the king has now appointed certain bishops to be of my council. What think you, senor? Will any Englishman that is the king's subject counsel me or be friendly to me against his pleasure? No, forsooth.
It is plain to me that whatever aid your highness can expect must come from Spain. I myself am shortly to leave this kingdom. But I hear that Monsieur Chapuis, who comes in my stead, is a notable expert in canon law, and will, I trust, be able to offer you better counsel on such matters.
Senor, you have so worked for me in this sorry business that I shall be grateful to you for life. I pray that the Emperor will bestow his favor upon you and reward you as I never can.
I am sick at heart to see you thus beset, madam. But if I have served you in any way, however humble, I think myself much honored. I shall continue to pray daily to God and his saints to preserve and uphold your highness, and grant you may receive right and justice.
I thank you, senor.
This is a sorry business for the realm of England and the king's estate.
You hear? I tell you, my lord cardinal, it is like to be a sorry business for the church in England if this matter be not speedily settled according to the king's desire.
I think it like to be a sorry business for the church, my lord cardinal of York, whichever way it goes. But if only a scandal can be avoided...
My lords and gentlemen, room for the queen's grace.
My lord cardinal of York, Cardinal Campeggio. I am glad to see your lordship. What is your pleasure with me?
Madam, His Holiness the Pope has been informed how grave doubts are entertained with regard to the validity of your marriage with the king. He has, therefore, sent the Cardinal of York and myself hither to understand the state of the question between your highness and the king's majesty.
Do your lordship wish to speak to me in private or publicly before all these folks? I fear nothing ye may allege against me, and I would all the world would hear it.
If it please your grace, I think it best we should go into your privy chamber, where we may declare secretly our opinions and counsel unto you. This we do only for the very zeal and obedience we bear to your grace.
I thank you for your good will, my lord cardinal of York. It is true I have great need of counsel in this case. Let us then go with him. Alas, my lord. Can it now be a question whether I am the king's lawful wife or no? When I have been married to him almost 20 years and never in the mean season doubt was raised?
Nevertheless, madam, certain learned doctors do now give their opinion that some irregularity may have taken place, whence great harm might ensue to the tranquility of this kingdom. As the case is of such moment and appears difficult of decision, His Holiness, who confides much in your prudence, counsels your grace that rather than press the matter to trial, you should take another course, which would greatly benefit yourself and your affair.
My lord, I know the sincerity of my own conscience, and wish above all to show myself a dutiful and obedient daughter of Holy Church. But I have heard that your lordship means to persuade me to profess in some religious community.
It rests with you, madam, by taking such a step, to satisfy God and your conscience, and preserve your good fame. Your grace would lose nothing but the person of the king, which indeed you have lost already, and I believe will never regain.
I know I may thank only you, my Lord Cardinal of York, for this trouble, because I have abhorred your high pride and vain glory, and little regarded your presumptuous tyranny and power, and especially for the malice you bear to my nephew the Emperor. You have kindled this fire.
No, madam, I am not the beginner nor the mover of this doubt in the king's conscience. It was sore against my will that ever your marriage should come into question. But the Pope hath deputed me to hear the cause, and that I swear to do indifferently.
My lord, I hold my husband's honor and conscience in more esteem than anything in this world. I love and have loved my lord the king as much as any woman can love a man. But I would not have borne him company as his wife for one moment against the voice of my conscience. Notwithstanding any dispensations from Rome, I came to him a virgin, and I am his true, lawful, wedded wife. Therefore, this proposal, made in the name of His Holiness, is not admissible. I know for a certainty that if His Holiness had heard what I have to say in my own defense, instead of listening to the arguments of my enemies, such a suggestion would never have been made.
The Holy Father will never refuse justice to anyone who demands it, madam. This counsel is only offered out of the love he bears you, for your own relief and to avoid greater evils. I pray your highness to yield to the king's pleasure rather than submit yourself to the perils of the trial. For consider what grief and trouble you would be in should sentence be pronounced against you. I beg you also to consider the scandals and enmities that might ensue.
Already the king has been advertised that certain ill-disposed persons and such as favor the emperor, intend to conspire against. And this is thought to be for the sake of your highness, or by your occasion. The king takes it very earnestly, madam, and considering your obstinacy in this matter, he cannot persuade himself that you love him as you ought, but rather that you hate him. You should consider well that if the king has this suspicion, he may lawfully withdraw from you, and for like reason not suffer the princess, your daughter, to come into your company. Which would be a very grievous thing.
On the other hand, instead of all these inconveniences, by entering some house of religion, your highness would preserve your dower, the guardianship of your daughter, your rank as princess, and in short, all you like to demand of the king. You will offend neither God nor your conscience, and put a seal to all the good actions of your life.
Most reverend lord, I lack the wisdom to answer such learned men as you are on this heavy matter. But your lordships must know that any attempt to make me take the veil will prove vain, that I shall defend to the last the soul and honor of my husband and myself. I mean to live and die in the estate of matrimony to which God has called me, and will never blaspheme against the sacrament of marriage. But I am an obedient daughter of the church, and submit myself to the Pope's judgment. This matter shall be decided by sentence, whichever way it may go. There is not anything, though I were to be torn limb from limb, that will compel me to alter this opinion. And if after death I should return to life, I would rather die again than change it.
Madam, I beg your highness, on my knees,
that of your goodness and prudence you will reconsider this determination and accept our counsel. For so you will spare yourself and your daughter, the king and his people, and the church in this realm, a whole infinity of trouble, which must ensue if this matter continue in dispute.
My lord, Cardinal of York, I have ever asked only that I be not condemned unheard in a hostile place and by partial judges. For that reason, I appeal to the Pope to advoke the case to Rome and there decide it. I know very well that any trial held here before your lordship must of necessity lead to injustice and many evil consequences.
Madam, I too pray that you will listen to the good Cardinal of York and heed his counsel. Unless you agree to our honorable proposals, a public trial held before us in this city must shortly take place.
Then be it so, my Lord Cardinal Campeggio. I have naught to fear save injustice, and can only pray that God, who seeth all, will support and uphold me.
Henry, King of England, come into the court.
Here, my lords.
Catherine, Queen of England, come into the court.
Sir, on my knees, I beseech you for all the love that has been between us. Let me have justice and right, and take some pity on me, for I am a poor woman and a stranger born out of your dominion, having here no assurance of friendship. Alas, sir, in what have I offended you? What occasion of displeasure have I showed you that you should put me from you after this sort? I take God and all the world to witness that I have been to you a true, humble, and obedient wife, ever conformable to your will and pleasure, being always contented with anything wherein you had delight or dalliance, without grudge or countenance of displeasure. I have been your wife these many years, and by me you have had divers children. And when ye had me at the first, I take God to my judge that I was a very maid, without touch of man. And whether it be true or not, I put it to your conscience. If there be any just cause that ye can allege against me, I am content to depart to my shame. If there be none, then I pray you, let me have justice at your hands. The king, your father, was in his time of such excellent wisdom that he was accounted among all men to be a second Solomon. The king of Spain, my father, was reckoned one of the wisest princes that reigned for many years. It is not then to be doubted but they had gathered as many wise counselors unto them as they thought meet, who thought the marriage between you and me good and lawful. Thus it is a marvel to hear what new inventions are now made against me that never intended anything but honesty. Therefore, I desire you in the way of charity to spare me the extremity of this court until I may know what order my friends in Spain will advise me to take. And if you will not, then your pleasure be fulfilled. And to God I commit my cause.
Catherine, Queen of England, come into the court.
Madam, ye be called again.
Catherine, Queen of England,
come into the court?
It makes no matter. This is no indifferent court for me. Therefore, I will not tarry. Go on your way.
My lord, for as much as the queen is gone, I will, in her absence, declare unto you all that she hath been to me as true, obedient, and conformable a wife as I could in my fantasy desire. And besides her noble parentage, she is a lady of most gentleness, humility, and buxomness, as I, this 20 years almost, have had experience.
Sir, I most humbly require your highness that you declare before this audience whether I have been the chief and first mover of this matter unto your majesty, or no. For I am greatly suspected of all men, verily.
My lord cardinal, I can well excuse you in that. You have been rather against me than they set forth in the attempting of it. No, my lords, the special cause that moved me to this matter was a certain scruple that pricked my conscience, whereby I feared lest I was living in adultery with my dead brother's wife, and so in great danger of God's indignation. For that all issues male, as the queen had by me, died incontinent after they came into the world. Being thus tossed in the waves of doubt and in despair of any other issue by this lady, now my wife, I was led further to consider the state of the realm and the danger that would ensue from the lack of a prince to succeed me. Remember, my lords, what mischief and manslaughter continued between the houses of York and Lancaster in the time of your fathers and grandfathers. Therefore, I thought it good to attempt the law herein, whether I may take another wife, by whom God may send me more issue. And not for any displeasure or misliking of the queen's person. Having taken this determination, I moved it to you, my lord of Canterbury, at the first, to have your license to put this matter in question. And so I did to you all, my lords, to which ye all consented under your seals.
That is the truth, if it please your grace. I doubt not but my brethren here present will acknowledge the same.
No, sir, not so, under your correction, or you have not mine.
See here, my lord of Rochester, is not this your hand and seal?
No, forsooth, sir, it is not.
How say you to that, my lord of Canterbury?
Sir, it is his hand and seal.
No, my lord. Indeed, you labored with me to have both my hand and seal, as others of my lord have done. But then I said unto you that I would never consent to any such act, for it was much against my conscience. God said, quod deus conjunctit, homo non separet. And forasmuch as this marriage was joined and made by God to a good intent, I say that men cannot break upon any willful occasion that which God hath made.
Such words you had unto me, but you were fully resolved at the last that I should subscribe your name and put your seal myself, and you would allow the same.
All which, under your correction, my lord, is not true.
Well, it maketh no great matter. We will not stand with you in argument. You are but one man.
Let us sit here a while, Mary, and enjoy the last of the sunlight.
You'll not be cold, Mother. Oh, let me wrap your cloak better round you.
There. Now. Come and sit beside me, child. See how beautiful it is. I have always loved this prospect of the river here at Windsor. How green the leaves are still, and yet soon it will be winter. This is a very green land. I remember I thought that when I first rode from the sea so many years ago. How green it is, and how beautiful.
And yet, madam, you must have been full of sorrow to leave your own fair country and all your kindred.
Yes, but my sisters and I had been well prepared. We knew it was our destiny to be married in foreign lands. Besides, there were such terrible storms at sea that I was glad enough to be on dry land again, as I remember. And all those who came to greet us made me so welcome that England seemed a merry place as well as beautiful.
You must think differently of England now, Mother.
Differently? No, I love this country still, for it has been good to me, and I've been happy here. I think of the time when the king, your father, and I were first married after the gray years of my widowhood, when all the world was young, and we had such brave pastimes. And the king always in the midst of the merrymaking. And so handsome, Mary. He was the handsomest prince in all Christendom. And always so gay and so loving.
And yet now, how can he, Mother? How can he? To cast you aside for that woman, witch, sorceress. Nan Bullen, whose grandsire was a city mercer, the lady Nan, forsooth. The night crow. Nan Bullen, the goggle-eyed whore. May she burn in hell.
No, Mary, please, my child, please. You only smirch yourself. You should pray, rather, that God will turn her from the path she treads. We may yet have cause to pity her, poor creature. As for the king, I trust so much in his natural goodness that I know if I could only have him with me for 2 months as we used to be, I could make him forget what has passed. Our enemies, his and mine, know it well enough. And so they contrive to keep him from me.
Surely, if the Pope were to pronounce in your favor and command the king to put away that woman and return to you, we might all be happy again.
If only the Pope would proceed to sentence and grant me justice. 4 years, Mary, since first I prayed he would decide the matter. 2 years since the legate's court was adjourned and the case advoked to Rome. And still, there is no decision. It is these delays that have bred schism and heresy and all the other evils here. The Pope's dallying keeps the king enthralled to the powers of darkness. He would never have declared himself head of the church against God's law if he had not been so deceived and misled.
No, not even Cardinal Wolsey would have persuaded him to that.
Poor Thomas. He was my enemy. But I could pity him at his end, for he did truly love the king and tried to serve him.
Will the king come back here, Mother, to Windsor?
Yes. I have had a message that he is returning soon, with the Lady Anne, who now goes with him everywhere, it seems.
And I must leave you.
You have to go to Richmond, Mary. That is a pleasant place. You would not like to stay if the lady was here.
And you, madam, you will stay?
No. The king is displeased, so the Duke of Norfolk tells me, by the inconvenience I am causing him. I have been commanded to go to one of Wolsey's old manors in Hertfordshire before he returns here.
Oh, Mother, I'm so afraid.
Afraid? No. The daughter of England, the granddaughter of Spain, is never afraid.
I am afraid for you. Afraid that something terrible will befall. So afraid that I may never see you again.
Come, Mary. You must not weep. Hush, sweetheart. Dry your tears. There. Do you remember when you were very little, the king was so proud of you, he held you in his arms to show you to some great foreign envoy and said, "By God, Master Ambassador, this girl never cries."
He has given me cause enough to weep since then.
There may be troublesome times ahead. But be patient, Mary. Obey your father in everything, save only that you do not offend against God and your conscience. Speak few words and meddle nothing in this great matter.
No, Mother.
You are 15 now, almost a woman grown. It has given me such happiness to have your company for these few weeks, my daughter. And I am certain that you will show yourself prudent and resolute, what trials soever may come to you. Your grandmother, Queen Isabella, led armies to drive the infidel out of Spain and bring back all the land to God. You may be called upon to bring this country back to him and the true church. If that be your destiny, Mary, stand firmly on the rock which is Christ, and you will find what strength you need to do God's work.
I will always do the utmost in my power to be as you would wish, madam. I swear by Christ's passion that I will never do anything to bring dishonor upon you.
I know, little one. I know. But be of good courage, for we never come to the kingdom of heaven but by trouble. And we may yet see a good end to this affair. The emperor will never desert us. Monsieur Chapuis, his ambassador, is a great comfort to me, and spares no effort on our behalf. Come. The sun has gone below the trees. It is growing cold. We will go indoors and warm ourselves. And you shall play some sweet music for me.
Senor Chapuis.
Francisco Felipez. Oh, this is a happy chance. I did not know you were in London.
I had some business for the Queen's household and visited certain of my friends at the court. But I must ride back to Bedfordshire today.
It is good to see you, Francisco. Oh, come to the fire and take some wine.
Oh.
One of the merchants here has given me some fine Spanish sack.
Thank you, senor. I would be glad of it. It is very cold today.
And the Queen? How is she?
Her health is only meekly good, but she suffers her troubles patiently, poor lady. She longs chiefly to see her daughter. They have not met since they were at Windsor together more than a year ago.
No. And neither has she seen the king since that time. Well, to your good health, Francisco. And the queen. May she have justice.
Amen to that.
Did you gather any fresh news from your friends at court?
Yes. And if what they say is true, a great danger threatens. The word is that this priest, Cranmer, whom they mean to make the new Bishop of Canterbury, has pledged his solemn oath to adhere entirely to the king's opinion on the matter of divorce. So much so, they say, that he has actually married the king to Anya, his concubine, in great secret in a room of the palace.
I feared something of this sort. I have warned the emperor that the Pope should delay sending the bulls for Canterbury until he has pronounced sentence on the queen's case, or at least forbid this Cranmer to meddle in it.
The queen is greatly perplexed by the Holy Father's coldness towards her. She has charged me to say that she begs once more for an immediate decision of her case, for she believes that if His Holiness were to decide in her favor, the king would even now obey him.
Or his subjects would compel him to do so. All the people here cry murder on the Pope for his delay over this affair. But His Holiness fears to lose the king by deciding against him.
Yes, and many believe there is a secret understanding between them to betray the queen.
If that is so, the Pope will be the first to repent. For unless he acts quickly and with resolution, he will be deprived of all authority in this kingdom through the great scandal of Christendom.
And once this accursed Anya sets her foot firmly in the stirrup, she will try to do the queen all the harm she can, and the princess also, which is the thing the queen dreads most.
Well, unless there is an amendment of the position soon. I think the emperor can hardly avoid making war on this kingdom. And in my opinion, it would not be difficult to conquer.
If the emperor were to forbid all intercourse of trade with Spain and Flanders, I believe the English would rise against this unholy marriage. Certainly their affections are all on the side of the queen. Whenever she stirs abroad, the peasants and country folk crowd the roadside to cry blessings on her.
Not only the peasants, Francisco. The nobility as well. All, save the Duke of Norfolk and two or three others, detest the concubine. Yet while the king's unruly passion persists, she will remain all-powerful?
Especially now, for they say she is with child. If she should bear a son.
I believe this is a time for playing with steel. I could wish the queen were not so scrupulous. She is the most virtuous woman I have ever known, and the highest-hearted, but too quick to trust that others are like herself, and too slow to do a little evil that much good might come of it.
You will never persuade her to agree to anything that might endanger the king's estate. No matter how he treats her, she cannot bring herself to blame him or to believe that it is his doing. In spite of all, Senor, I am certain she does still truly love him.
Poor lady. I am afraid she will never face the truth of the matter. I will write again to the Emperor. For once Cranmer is installed at Canterbury, he must certainly pronounce against the Queen. And all the rest of the clergy are now in such fear of the King that they would never dare oppose it.
Except the good Bishop of Rochester, and his opinion, alas, can have no weight, being quite alone against the others.
I have some hopes of Wolsey's old servant, Thomas Cromwell. He enjoys great credit with the King, and I believe he is a reasonable man. He seems anxious to maintain friendship with the Emperor, and so may be willing to help the Queen. I shall do my best to spread the net and see if I cannot catch him.
Then let us pray you are successful, Senor. I must return to my lady, for I hear she is shortly to be troubled with further deputations of counselors who continue to beset her with useless arguments.
I will see you on your way, Francisco, and I thank you for bringing me your news. Commend me to the Queen, and assure her that I will continue to spare no pains to achieve a good end of this sad affair.
And she will never cease to be grateful, for she looks on you as her especial friend and comfort.
Your Highness, the lords of Norfolk and Suffolk, my Lord Mountjoy, and others are without, and crave an audience.
So? A distinguished assembly. Well, my good Griffith, bid them enter. We will not keep these lordships waiting.
Madam.
My lord, gentlemen, the Queen's Grace will receive your lordship.
I am glad to see you all, my lords and gentlemen. I had thought myself quite forsaken so far from the court. What is your pleasure with me?
If it please you, madam, we are come to declare unto you in the king's name that henceforward you shall be required on your allegiance to renounce the name and title of queen, and take instead the name of Princess Dowager. Furthermore, you are required to submit yourself to the king's will in the matter of your marriage, by which doing, you would confer a great boon on this realm and prevent a possible effusion of blood.
My lord of Norfolk, it is useless to address these arguments to me. I am the king's true wife, the crowned and anointed queen of England, and so I will remain during my life.
Notwithstanding your obstinacy, madam, it is the king's pleasure that you shall no longer use the title of queen. If you continue in this disobedience, his highness will cease to provide for the expenses of this great household and the wages of your servants.
As to that, my lord, I am at my husband's mercy. I care not to begin keeping house myself so late in life. I hope the king will allow me enough for my confessor, my physician, and 2 maids for my chamber. If even that is too much to ask, I would gladly go about the world begging alms for the love of God, but as long as I live, I will entitle myself queen.
Madam, it is idle to resist further. We have also to tell you, in the king's name, that the most famous universities in Christendom have clearly determined that the marriage between you and His Highness was unlawful. And now he has taken to wife the Lady Anne. According to the laws of God, and by the consent of all the lords, spiritual and temporal, and all the commons of this realm.
All the world knoweth by what authority it was done, much more by power than by justice. For without any lawful separation or divorce, and the case pending at Rome, it was brought to be determined here, within the king's own realm, by a man of his own making, the Bishop of Canterbury, who is no indifferent person. Considering the king now has as much or more authority over the church in England than if he were pope? Indifferent. No, my lord. The place would have been more indifferent if it had been adjudged in hell, for I think the devils themselves do tremble to see truth so oppressed.
Oh, madam.
The king may do in his realm by his royal power what he will, but my matter dependeth not on the universities, nor on the realm, but on the court of Rome before the Pope, whom I account God's vicar and his judge on earth.
It standeth not within the law of God, madam, nor man, nor with the king's honor to have two queens named in the same realm. And his highness marvels not a little that you should so disobey his just commandments and encourage other of his subjects to do the same.
My lord Mountjoy, I am the king's lawful wife and queen, and owe him obedience in all things lawful. Yet would I rather disobey him than God and my conscience, whereby I should endanger my immortal soul. For if I agreed to your persuasion, I should be a slanderer of myself, and confess to have been the king's harlot these 24 years, which should be such an offense against God that nothing could dispense it.
But, madam, if you continue thus to usurp the title of queen, you shall only declare yourself to be vainglorious in desiring of that name, and may thereby lose the good zeal and favor of the people.
I stick not on this matter for vainglory, but only for I know myself the king's true wife. And if so be I lose the favor of the people, yet I trust to go to heaven. For I would rather be a poor beggar's wife and be sure of heaven than queen of all the world and stand in doubt thereof.
Notwithstanding these protestations, madam, consider that if you so persist in your obstinacy against the king, to whom you are none other than a subject, it may be thought to intend some disturbance and dissension to ensue in this realm.
It is not for any obstinacy, my lord of Norfolk, but only for the discharge of my conscience and the saving of my right. As long as the king took me for his wife, then I am also his subject. But if he take me not as his wife, I came not into this realm as merchandise, nor yet to be married to any merchant. I came to be his lawful wife, and not as a subject to live otherwise under his dominion.
Think well, madam, lest your disobedience to his most just and reasonable commands should provoke the king's highness, not only against yourself, but also against your household and servants, to their utter undoing. And furthermore, that your unkindness may be the occasion for the king to withdraw his fatherly love from your daughter, the Lady Princess, which cause at least should move you, if no other will.
My servant, being the king's subject, have served me as faithfully as any could do, and I would gladly recompense their travails, but in this case I can only remit them to the king's mercy. As to the princess, my daughter, she is the king's true begotten child, and as God gave her unto us, for my part will I render her again unto the king as his daughter, to do with her as shall stand with his pleasure, trusting she will prove an honest woman.
If you cling to some fantasy that the king may return to you, madam, I assure you he will never do so as long as he lives for any consideration whatsoever. But if even yet you would acquiesce and consent to what has been done, and cannot be undone, he will ensure your honorable treatment and enjoyment of your lands and goods.
And by your so doing, and showing yourself like a woman of virtue, wisdom, and obedience, as you have always hitherto been noted, his highness will rather augment and enlarge your possessions, in such wise as you may be right well contented. But if you remain in your own opinion, the king will be compelled to withdraw his affection from you and conceive an evil opinion of high displeasure toward you.
My lord, I shall continue to pray for the preservation of the king's estate, and that God will enlighten him and not allow so sweet a prince to remain in error. If it can be proved that I have ever procured anything against his grace which might trouble him or his realm, I am content to suffer for it. If I brought England little good, I should be the more loath to bring it harm. But I humbly require his highness that he will attempt me no further on this matter, for I hereby reaffirm that I am his true wife, and will never relinquish that name until such time a sentence be given to the contrary by our holy father the Pope, upon whom my case depended.
This has been a good day's sport, Master Ambassador. I am glad you were able to bear me company.
I too, Master Cromwell. It has been pleasant to taste the country air. And your English falcons are the finest in the world. I have often regretted that you did not come to your master's notice and favor in Cardinal Wolsey's time. For I believe the king's affairs would then have prospered more. But I consider him fortunate in possessing a counselor as able and talented as yourself in these troubled and dangerous times.
I thank you for your good opinion, Master Ambassador.
And now, could you render the king better service than any man ever did before? I entreat you, Master Cromwell, for the love of God, your master's welfare, the peace and tranquility of this realm and of all Christendom, to try and persuade the king, who has always before shown himself a wise and virtuous prince, to return to the right path and take back his lawful wife. I say this to you because I believe it is a task which you could undertake better than any other, your credit, authority, and reputation being greater than those of any man in England.
I thank you for your counsel, Master Chapuis. I know it to be well meant, for I have always found in you a right willing intention to transact business amicably and maintain friendship between the Emperor and the King, my master.
Then I beg you once again to consider that no friendship or alliance can be more advantageous for this kingdom of England than the Emperor's. Not only for your master, but for yourself, since you have in your hands the whole management of affairs. Think that while Cardinal Wolsey held for the Emperor, his own concerns went prosperously. But as soon as he turned his coat, everything began to go wrong for him.
That is true enough. For my part, I am more than ever willing to maintain friendship with the Emperor. And the king himself in his heart still bears as much goodwill and affection to his majesty as he always did.
As does the Emperor. But he must be swayed by the present treatment of the queen, his aunt, and by the attempt lately made to persuade her to relinquish her just right.
Some may think the queen shows herself an obstinate woman. But I believe no human creature could have made a wiser or more courageous answer to the Duke of Norfolk than she did. No, truly. God and nature wronged Queen Catherine in not making her a man. But for her sex, she would surpass all the heroes of history.
So I think, Master Cromwell. And I am glad indeed to hear you say so. I can hardly credit that the king, your master, would really wish the queen to do anything which might prejudice her case. For he must know that the sentence given by the Archbishop of Canterbury in no wise affects her real position, which depends entirely upon the Pope's determination.
Yes, but the king believes he will never have justice from the Pope, and for that reason was resolved to act on his own account. I tell you privately, Master Ambassador, that neither the king himself nor all the learned doctors in the world could ever persuade me that his great desire for the lady he has now married did not influence his proceedings. But, after all, if his conscience is at rest, nobody has the right to interfere with his actions in his own kingdom.
The king has always colored his divorce under a scruple of conscience, without which, he once asserted, he would not for any consideration have taken another wife. But I pray you, Master Cromwell, what possible scruple can he now find to justify his taking away the queen's title and reducing her household?
Well, Master Ambassador, the king considers it is no fault of his that the queen has not received better treatment from him. Since she remains obdurate in refusing the terms offered to her, he no longer feels obliged to keep her in royal state. The king is not acting out of malice or revenge, but merely to avoid inconvenience. As otherwise, he could have no peace at home.
And what of the Princess Mary? I am told that the king's newborn daughter, Elizabeth, has been proclaimed Princess of Wales, a title which belongs by right to the Princess Mary. I cannot believe he means to declare his first daughter a bastard, or deprive her of her lawful place in the succession. But a rumor is afloat that her household also is to be reduced, even that she may be sent to live as a maid of honor to the new child.
The matter is to be discussed by the Privy Council, but I cannot reveal what I know of it without permission from the king, my master. However, nothing in the world will prevail upon the king to do anything which might go against the sentence given by the Archbishop of Canterbury, inasmuch as it concerns his own honor and the interests of his new daughter, who is indeed proclaimed princess and held to be such.
Then I can only say that I am very much astonished by these strange proceedings, Master Cromwell. All the world knows that the Emperor is by nature inclined to peace. But when just reasons have compelled him to wage war, the victory, with God's help, has always been his.
Oh, yes, there is no doubt that should the Emperor decide to make war on this country, he could very easily destroy it. But I cannot think that would greatly benefit his affairs. And should he refuse to allow his subjects to trade with him, the loss would be equal on both sides. As to this business of the Queen and the Princess, it ought not to be an obstacle to the settlement of other, more weighty matters. Just remember that both are mortal. The Queen is old and not likely to live long, and the Princess is in bad health. Whatever people might say or think, I ask you, would the Emperor have great reason to regret their death?
Master Cromwell, as we are both trying to bring about a closer alliance between our masters, I will not waste time by mentioning all the dangers which would ensue should anything untoward happen to either of the ladies.
Oh, you may be assured that every care shall be taken of them. But the wisest course for both mother and daughter would be to assent to the king's new marriage without further resistance, which can only bring trouble upon them. However, I will do my best, and let us hope all will turn out well in the end. And now, Master Chapuis, shall we ride on?
Let us do so, sir.
Your Highness?
Enter, Francisco. Oh, how cold it is. The winds that blow over these Lincolnshire marshes seem to pierce one's very bones.
Yes, and the mists that rise from them are enough to throw the strongest into an ague.
It is strange. But since I have been here at Buxton, I find myself often thinking of the kingdom of Granada and the gardens of the Alhambra. It is difficult to believe they can exist in the same world. I understand much better now the lament which the Moorish infidels made when they were driven from them. You have something to tell me, Francisco?
Only that the Duke of Suffolk, with divers other gentlemen and many followers, have arrived, madam. They wish to have speech with you and all the household.
Tomorrow, Francisco. My Lord of Suffolk can wait upon my pleasure until then.
They say my Lord of Suffolk is not well pleased with his charge, madam. One of his men told me that on his departing from London, he was heard to wish that he might break a leg before he went on such an errand.
Poor Charles Brandon. He was my friend once. But like the others, he dared not disobey the king. Francisco, I fear he may have orders to enforce you and the others to swear some oath denying the authority of our Holy Father, the Pope, which I know would be much against your conscience.
I have thought on this very matter, madam, and I believe, if you are willing, I might say, as spokesman for the others, that we acknowledge the king has made himself head of the church, and so they may be satisfied.
I cannot deny that it would be a great comfort to me if by any means I might keep my friends about me, Francisco. But neither you nor the others must do anything to endanger your souls for my sake.
No, madam.
I am told that the next parliament is to decide whether I am to suffer martyrdom. But I fear nothing these people can do to me now. For there is no punishment from God, save for neglected duty. Go, Francisco, and tell my Lord of Suffolk that I will give him audience tomorrow, after dinner.
As your highness.
Furthermore, seeing that you still persist in your great stomach and obstinacy, madam, the king is minded to manifest his high displeasure unto you and to clip your wings a little. He means to diminish the number of your servants and has given order for your removal from hence to Somersham in Cambridgeshire.
Somersham? Nay, my lord, that is the most pestilent, unhealthy place in the land. Should I consent to go there, I would be incurring the guilt of mine own death. I will never do so, unless you bind me with rope.
Surely, madam, you ought by this time to be tired of molesting and tormenting the king. The Lord Archbishop of Canterbury has pronounced sentence on your matter, to the great repose of the whole realm. Fair issue has already sprung of his new marriage, and more likely to follow by God's grace.
Madam, I beg you to consent to this removal and to the new order of your household, according to the king's commands. Howsoever you order yourself in your cause.
My Lord Mountjoy, I take this false change in my title and the new ordering of my servants to be to the great hurt of my cause. And therefore I will not in any wise be conformable to them, unless by force compelled.
Nevertheless, madam, henceforward your servants must all be sworn to you as Princess Dowager and not as Queen.
You may put that oath to them, my Lord of Suffolk, but I will not be served by any who are so sworn, nor by any who do not address me as Queen, which I am.
May it please your lordships, I have taken one oath of allegiance to my lady, Queen Catherine. She still lives, and during her life, I know no other queen in this realm.
We know no other queen but Queen.
I know you, Francis Phillips. It was you who once mightily deceived the king, and went privily into Spain to carry false tales to the emperor at this lady's behest. But you shall learn, all of you, that the king is not to be disobeyed. Let all those who refuse the oath be committed to the porter's ward, and let no man come nigh them.
I refuse the oath!
My lord, any bad treatment you may devise for my faithful servants will grieve me. But I would rather be hewn into pieces than consent to anything which is against God's law and the honor and conscience of my husband and myself. But I appeal to the king of his goodness and for the great love there has been between us, to allow me the attendance of my confessor, as I have never confessed in other than a Spanish tongue. Also my physician and apothecary for the preservation of my poor body, that I may live as long as it pleaseth God. They are both my countrymen, and the king knows them as well as I do. As to my maids, I will take no others into my service, and without them I will neither undress nor go to bed. Whatever other servants you may appoint, I take them not for servants but for guards, as henceforth I consider myself to be my husband's prisoner.
You should take heed, madam, lest you come to think yourself above the law of this realm. For if you thus persist in your obstinacy, you may incur pain of death for treason against the king's highness.
And which of you, my lord, holds a commission to execute this penalty upon me? If such be here, let him come forward. I am ready. I ask only that I be not done to death in some secret place, but openly and in the sight of the people. I am queen, And queen will I die.
Notwithstanding all you can say, madam, we hold the king's commission to convey you to Somersham, and you must prepare to make the journey.
Then you must carry me by force, Charles Brandon. I will tarry here no longer. If you wish to take me with you, you must first break down my door.
By God's soul, this is the most obstinate woman that ever lived. I tell you, sirs, there is no other remedy than to take her hence by force.
Would it not be best to send to the king to learn his further pleasure before such extreme order is taken? The people in these parts are all so well affected to the Lady Catherine that some disturbance might ensue. That would not be to the king's honor.
And who knows what fantasies her willfulness might lead her to commit? She may feign herself sick and keep to her bed. Oh, what if she will not put on her clothes? You are right, my Lord Mountjoy. We will send to the king. For these extremities were not well remembered in our instructions.
By your good leave, Master Ambassador, I am sent to lead you to the King's Highness.
Is not your name Griffith, once usher to Queen Catherine?
Aye, the same. But I was obliged to leave my lady's service, and have not seen her for nigh on 2 years. Not since my Lord of Suffolk came to Buckton and would have taken her to a very pestilential house, had not her grace so stoutly resisted. Have you any news of the poor lady, sir?
Little good, and much that is only bad. She would not recognize her new servants and never leaves her bedchamber, save to hear mass. All her food is cooked by her own maid before her eyes for fear of poison. She is as poor as Job, she says. But she does still have her confessor and her physician. Also the good Francisco Felipe.
I am shamed and sickened to see how grievously she has been wronged. There are many honest men yet in England who would willingly take up arms to help her and the good princess, her daughter. But they have no leader to give them courage. Now that the Pope has at last given sentence in her favor, could not the Emperor act?
The Emperor is the greatest monarch in Christendom. No doubt he will do what seems best to him, with God's help.
One hears many things here at court. And I tell you, Master Ambassador, it is certain neither the Queen nor the Princess will be safe for a moment, while the concubine holds power. I myself have heard Bullen say they should both be put to death as rebels and traitors, and I believe she means to bring it to pass if she may. It is said she thinks of nothing else, and has told the King she will never conceive a son while the Queen lives.
Well, I am here today to entreat the King's Highness for license to visit the Queen. Since her removal to Kimbolton, none of her friends have seen her. Now I hear from her physician that she is gravely ill and asking to see me.
Come then, Master. I will bring you at once to the King's presence. I thank you for your condescension, and I beg you will commend me to my poor mistress, and tell her she is daily in my prayers, and those of all honest men.
I will indeed, for I know it would bring her comfort. But let us not tarry further. Time may be all too short.
Aye, sir.
Follow me. Master Ambassador.
You are very welcome.
Your Highness is most gracious.
My secretary, Cromwell, tells me that you wish to visit the sick lady, that the matter requires haste. But there is another question of much greater importance to be discussed between us.
May it please your Highness.
I must warn you, unless I shortly receive some definite offer of alliance from the Emperor, I shall be obliged to lend an ear to the French proposals. So pressing are they.
His Majesty has of late been so much occupied with his expedition to Tunis that he has had to postpone all other affairs until it was concluded. This, I assure your Highness, is the sole reason.
Ambassador, I am not a fool to be gulled by excuses and dissimulation, which may in the end cause me to lose both the French and the Emperor. I am an Englishman, not a Frenchman or a Spaniard, and therefore not accustomed to use deception.
Your Highness has no reason to mistrust the Emperor, who has always shown himself your true friend.
A French alliance would have many great advantages for this country. Besides which, the Emperor has of late caused me great annoyance and wrong by using threats and force to procure sentence against me from the Pope, merely to satisfy a woman's desire for vengeance.
His Majesty cannot be held to blame for recommending the Queen's right to justice. He will always consider himself bound to protect his aunt by whatever means may be necessary. But notwithstanding, I am certain that he would be glad to please your highness, as far as his honor and conscience will permit.
If he is sincere in these protestations of friendship, he would take measures to have the sentence at Rome revoked, and cease from meddling on the Lady Catherine's behalf in my affairs.
But in any case, she cannot live long now, and once she is dead, there will be no further cause of dissension between us.
The Queen's death would be a matter of the utmost regret and sorrow to all Christendom, and could certainly profit no one. As to the sentence from Rome, that was in no way of the Emperor's procuring, and he has no power to alter it.
Well, go to her when you choose, but you may not find her alive. They say she is much worse, and in extremis.
In that case, will not your highness, of your great goodness and mercy, give license for the queen's daughter to go to her also? It would be of such consolation to her at her end.
Ah, that is another matter. I should have to consult with my council. The Lady Catherine is a proud, stubborn woman of a very high courage. Had she taken it into her head to act, she could easily have mustered an army and waged war against me, as fiercely as ever her mother did in Spain. And her example had encouraged her daughter to continue in disobedience to my just commands. However, I will consider your request and give you my answer in due time. But remember to tell your master of the situation in which I am placed, that he may in no wise doubt my honesty.
Mr. Sapoy, my special friend, it is so good of you to come to me in this foul winter weather. I can die now in your arms and not all alone like some wild beast.
No, madam, you must not think of death, but take courage and do your best to recover. If not for your own sake, consider that on your life depends in great measure the peace and unity of Christendom. The king is very sorry to hear of your illness, and as soon as you are better, he has promised to arrange for you to be moved to a more fitting place of residence.
You are very good, my friend, and mean to console me. But I'm not afraid. Only thankful that the end of my troubles is at hand. For in truth, I am weary.
Shall I leave you now to rest, madam?
Oh, no, no. It gives me such pleasure to see and talk to you. Tell me of the Emperor. Is he well? How do his affairs prosper?
He is in good health, madam, God be thanked, and has lately gained a very glorious victory over the Turks at Tunis.
He has so many weighty matters, so many kingdoms to consider. I am afraid he will never have time for this unhappy country until it is too late.
You must not think he will ever abandon your cause, madam. But in view of the many difficulties thrown in the way by others, I do not believe he could have done more than he has, short of making war upon this kingdom.
Which God forbid. And my daughter, is she now fully recovered from her illness?
Yes, madam. I promise you she is well, and bears all her troubles with great patience and dignity.
Is she still in that house with the king's bastard?
Yes, but I understand her situation has somewhat improved of late. Whenever possible, I have made it my business to be where I could see her pass by on her journeys abroad. And she is so beloved by all the people for her great beauty and gentleness, it would rejoice your heart. For one yet so young, she conducts herself so wisely and honorably that your grace need not fear, but she will prove worthy of her noble parentage, whatever may befall.
Poor Mary. Poor child. She has had little joy in her growing up. It was better had she been any honest poor man's daughter.
I have again entreated the king to allow the princess to come to you, madam. He has promised to consider the matter and give me his answer soon.
You have been so diligent on my affairs, Monsieur Chapuis, that I can never thank you sufficiently. But you must trust to God for your reward. I can give you nothing but my prayers.
If I have served you in any way, madam, that is my reward, though God knoweth I have been able to do little enough.
There are some other matters yet to trouble you.
Madam.
I ask that my poor servants be given their wages, and something besides, lest they should be in want. Also, marriage portions for my maid. It is little enough, they being so few. I owe money for drugs and to the laundress, and I beg that none of my debts be left unpaid. They took my jewels long ago, but there is a gold collar which I brought out of Spain. It contains a fragment of the true cross. I should like my daughter to have it. Also my furs, though they are old. And I desire 500 masses for my soul.
Do not distress yourself with such cares, Your Grace. There is time enough.
Time? No, my friend. Time is passing. Soon it will be too late. There has been so much time. 8 years and more since first this matter came in question. If some remedy be not applied shortly, there will be no end to the ruined souls, the martyred saint, already the holy bishop of Rochester and good Thomas More. The steadfast will stand firm and suffer, but the greater number will fail if they have none to give them strength and stray away like sheep without a shepherd. It troubled me so greatly that this has been on my account.
No, madam, never think that.
Monsieur Chapuis, could I have done otherwise? It would have been a mortal sin to deny my marriage. How could I have consented to so great a wrong? Yet neither could I have asked for war against my husband's realm. And now, unless God and His Holiness act swiftly, this whole community of Christian souls will be condemned to darkness and destruction. But could I have done otherwise? Would it not have been better if I too had suffered martyrdom? Would that have purged the evil? The cause was mine. Is mine also the guilt?
There are other ways of suffering martyrdom than at the stake, madam. And you know well that God has sometimes seen fit to allow an evil to spring up in the world for the greater exaltation of the good and confusion of the bad. The heresies and scandals in this country are not so deeply rooted that they cannot be removed. Your husband's reason may yet be restored. But throughout, you have acted always according to the laws of God and the Church. You have established right and justice in the eyes of all honest men. You could not have done otherwise.
You are a great comfort to me, my friend. You may be right. I pray God that you are. But you must be weary from your journey, and I have kept you long talking. Go now and rest. I think I, too, might sleep a little. Oh, but first I would send a letter to my husband. Will you help me and write down my words?
Yes, madam, gladly.
My most dear husband, Lord and King,
yes, madam.
The hour of my death now drawing on, the tender love I owe you forces me to commend myself unto you and put you in remembrance of the health of your soul. For my part, I pardon you everything and devoutly pray God will pardon you also. For the rest, I commend unto you Mary, our daughter, beseeching you be a good father unto her. Lastly, I make this vow, that mine eyes have desired the sight of you above all things.
I cannot delay in communicating to your Imperial Majesty the very grievous news of the death of your aunt, the good queen, which occurred on Friday, the day after Epiphany, toward 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Cromwell informed me that a most honorable funeral service will be performed, but I shall not attend, as they do not mean to bury her as queen. No words can express the delight which this king has felt at her death. When he received the news, he was heard to exclaim, "Thank God, we are now free from any fear of war." The next day, which was Sunday, he dressed entirely in yellow, and his bastard daughter Elizabeth was taken triumphantly to church to the sound of trumpets and with great display. But according to the reports which reach me on every hand, the grief and indignation of the people is truly amazing.
The Lady Catherine is a proud, stubborn woman of very high courage. Had she taken it into her head to act, she could easily have mustered an army and waged war against me as fiercely as ever her mother did in Spain.
God and nature wronged Queen Catherine in not making her a man. But for her sex, she would surpass all the heroes in history.
She was the most virtuous woman I have ever known, and the highest hearted. But too quick to trust that others were like herself, and too slow to do a little evil that much good might come of.
True and Lawful Queen was written by Alison Plowden. Kathleen Helm played Catherine of Aragon, and Hector Ross, Henry VIII. Other principal parts were played by John Pullen as Eustace Chapuis, Frank Duncan as Francisco Felipes, David March as Don Inigo de Mendoza, Francis de Wolfe as Cardinal Wolsey, Peter Tuddenham as Cardinal Campeggio, John Graham as Thomas Cromwell, Lockwood West as the Archbishop of Canterbury, Brian Haynes as the Bishop of Rochester, Alan Dudley as the Duke of Norfolk, Peter Pratt as the Duke of Suffolk, Godfrey Kenton as Lord Mountjoy, Rosalind Shanks as Mary Tudor, and Basil Jones as Griffiths. Other parts were played by Patricia Gallimore and David Brierley. The play was produced by Joe Burrows.